Welcome to the January 29th, 2009 episode of Blue Shift, brought to you from NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center. At Blue Shift, we want to share stories that show you just how science works. Science is a constant process of questions and answers. You ask a question, seek the answer, and chances are your answer also raises even more questions. When early astronomers first pointed their telescopes at the sky, their observations revealed a universe they'd never seen before. But seeing these new objects and phenomena just whet their appetites for more knowledge, so we always keep looking. This thirst for knowledge has led to the development of better telescopes, new understandings, and many of the amazing discoveries and surprises of the past 400 years in astronomy. For this episode, we're bringing you the story of a cosmic mystery found by a balloon-borne experiment called Arcade. This mission was looking for the radio signatures of the earliest stars in the universe, but they stumbled onto a very strange signal. What is it? Well, that's exactly what Al Kogut and Dale Fixon would like to know.
Arcade is an instrument that we built with the idea of looking for the heat signature of the first stars that would form after the Big Bang. And what we saw when we got our data and we looked at the part that we thought was the microwave background and we looked at the part that we thought was coming from our galaxy, we saw there was this big booming signal left over that was extremely hard to explain, in part because there should be a small signal from radio emission from other galaxies. Our galaxy emits radio waves, and there are a lot of other galaxies in the universe, and you can roughly estimate how bright the sky should be just from the radio glow of all these galaxies. And what shocked us was the signal we're seeing was 6 times brighter than the combined emission from every other galaxy in the known universe.
Well, I've always resisted saying, what is it? And first establish, do we really see it? And so we worked pretty hard at making sure that we didn't have any instrumental errors. So we processed the data in many different ways and looked at making sure that it wasn't anything in the galaxy that we know about.
I remember when Dale first came into my office with a plot of our results after correcting for the emission from our own galaxy, and we could plainly see on one half of the graph the expected signal from the microwave background, and then there are these points marching up the left side of the graph getting brighter and brighter, and we looked at each other and said, these shouldn't be here. And we basically spent the next year trying to make those points go away. And it was only after spending a year trying various ways to account for them within the instrument, within our galaxy, within the atmosphere, then the only thing left over is something from deep space. For our instrument, we want to get above the atmosphere, which is why we look at the balloons. The atmosphere itself is warm and emits a fair amount of microwave radiation, so we just want to get above it to avoid having to account for its signal. So we're lifting a payload that weighs about 3,000 pounds up to an altitude of about 120,000 feet. And we put this one on a really big helium balloon. The balloon, when it's fully inflated at float, is a little over 100 meters in diameter, which means it would pretty much take up a full-size football field.
Yeah, you could play football
in the balloon.
In the balloon. A full football game. I mean, players, kickoff, everything would fit inside the balloon.
One of the nicest things about the suborbital program is because you get the payload back and you can make iterative improvements, you can take risks in terms of the instrument design that would be crazy to take if you had to shoot it up on a rocket and it had to work once and you never get it back. One very interesting idea would be to take it, make some slight modifications to improve its accuracy, and then refly it to observe a much bigger chunk of the sky. Now, when we flew it in 2006, which is the data we're talking about here, we got a total of 2.5 hours of good observations from a 4-hour flight. That was limited by the high altitude winds. Arcade, in order to cool it, is submerged in something like 500 gallons of superfluid liquid helium. And when we launched, we were never sure how long that would last. So we took the first flight opportunity we had, even though we knew it would be a short flight, because there wasn't any point waiting for a long flight if the helium was going to run out after 2 hours. Well, we got our flight, and after 4 hours, we actually had only burned through about 20% of our helium. So we could have flown for 10 or 15 hours. So it would be very interesting to take a slightly improved version of this instrument and take it back to Texas and wait this time for better weather at 120,000 feet.
If that was interesting, we could also fly it like 6 months later, get the other half of the northern hemisphere sky, and then possibly go to Australia for a couple of southern hemisphere flights if we had four launches, two from Texas and two from Australia, we could get 80% of the sky. Only the polar caps would be missing. Since this radiation is everywhere, that would pretty well be all we would want in terms of sky coverage.
Well, we are hoping to refly Arcade. It was certainly a very enjoyable experiment to build because it was as much a thermal experiment as it was a radio experiment. I guess the other thing that's interesting to say is if you want to hear this radio background, you actually can do it by taking a standard FM radio, holding your antenna so that it's parallel to the ground, tuning it between stations, and then a few percent of the resulting static will actually be this signal coming from beyond the galaxy.
If you can look at something much better, you can often find something new and interesting. The real thing is if you build an instrument that's better than anyone has built before to look in some part of the spectrum or some part of space that no one has looked before, most of the time you get interesting answers.
If you'd like to know more about Arcade and its deep space mystery, check out our website at universe.nasa.gov/blueshift. We're also working on our blogs and other cool stuff. And drop us a line on our feedback form. Tell us what you think about this episode and what you'd like to hear about next time. Join us again in a couple of weeks for another episode about the questions, answers, and mysteries of the universe. This is Sarah Mitchell, bringing the universe closer to you with BlueShift.